100 more. You say I got a warped imagination and a twisted view, but I don't have to write a script to a horror flick to spell it out to you. You sound surprised to hear that I am such a fragile man, but you can see it in my posture that I have carried all the bags I can. Not the bags under my eyes, but I have earned them too, from all the sleep I lost from losing, just like I lost you. Lost you.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Report. I'm Brian Sanchez, aka DJB, here with you. Got a great show for you in store today. We're going to cover the headlines at the beginning. We're going to hit the middle segment. We're going to have the Sports Report Top 10. Then at the end, we're going to rep the Bay with P-Ab and T-Baby. We're covering everything today. We got suspensions. We got fines, we got wins, losses, injuries, trades, and so much more. You can find the Sports Report on Facebook. Just go up to the top bar and search the Sports Report. You go ahead and like that. A couple links up there for today for some videos and audio I'm talking about. Those you're going to want to see. And we're going to go ahead and get started here with the headlines. Tony La Russa, his team is in the playoffs right now, the St. Louis Cardinals. He has been fined in an in-game interview yesterday on TBS, he openly criticized the umpires. They asked him about the zone because La Russa had been yelling at Jerry Meals, the umpire, all game long. He was livid about this strike zone. And on the in-game interview, they asked him about it, and he said that he was working with two different strike zones there. Now, this isn't very good. This can work on multiple levels. This is a problem. One, it could loosely be seen as Tony La Russa calling Jerry Meals a cheater. We've seen umpires and referees slant games before because they put money on them and try and work it. So when you're accused of having two different zones, that can make it seem like you're trying to favor a team. And in this case, La Russa thought his team was getting jacked because their zone was much smaller. Since that has happened, the MLB has fined Tony La Russa, and Tony saw it coming. He knew once he said that he was going to be in trouble, and he, in a quote, said that he knew he crossed the line. He said, "I know what the line is. I got upset and crossed the line." He went on to say that Jerry Meals is a professional umpire and is very good at what he does. He will take the fine with no problems at all because he knows he was in the wrong, and he just got heated up in the moment. This is playoff baseball we're talking about. Cardinals going at it with the Phillies. You know, it gets intense. They're trying to move on. You play 162 games. You commit 5 months to one season, and you think it's going to slip away because an umpire isn't calling it fair? That's just not going to go. So that was pretty bold of La Russa, but you don't know bold until you've heard what country singer Hank Williams Jr. said. He is the guy who sings the Monday night football songs. Are you ready for some football? He's that guy. He's got the cowboy hat, sunglasses. He's old and ugly, but he always has tons of hot girls dancing around him in the video. And he sings a little song about the matchup each week because it changes, and he writes a new song every week, and that's what he's famous for. He's been doing that for 23 years. But last night, there wasn't one. Some people may have noticed on the game, if you hadn't heard about the story, some people may not have, but there was no "Are You Ready for Some Football?" And here's the reason. Williams went on the Fox News show. It's called Fox and Friends. And he made some comments about President Obama. They brought up Obama's golfing trip with Boehner. And this is what Williams had to say about it. He said it was like Hitler playing golf with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. And once he did that, the people who were interviewing him, he was in a separate area. There was a Skype interview, and they were just stunned. They didn't even know what to say because he compared Obama to Hitler. Now, I'm not going to get political, but if you like Obama, whether you like him or not, you can't compare him to Hitler. It's never okay to drop a Hitler reference. It's just wrong. But he wasn't done there. He went on to call Obama and Biden enemies of the country. And he called Obama and Biden dumb like the Three Stooges. And one of the interviewers dryly pointed out, that's only two. And it just showed Williams was not in a straight state of mind. If you listen to the whole interview, it's up on my page, on the Sports Report Facebook page. You can listen to it. He just seems incoherent and he seems out of it. He really made himself look stupid. And Monday night suspended him from having his song on the broadcast. And future songs will depend on how his behavior is the next couple of days, because this is either a story that could burn out quickly and go away, or it's a story that'll linger and always be a problem for him. So hopefully he'll do something to put it out. Hopefully he won't have any more problems, or he's going to have financial problems because he'll stop getting paid to do the Monday night games. So never okay to drop Hitler. Never okay to mention him. You call him the president, an enemy of the state. Come on, man. That's just dumb. Now, earlier today, on a more positive note, the Texas Rangers, famous around these parts for losing to the Giants in the World Series last year, have moved on to the ALCS. They put away the Tampa Bay Rays today 4-3. They did so on four solo home runs. Three of them came from Adrian Beltre. Beltre hit all three of those home runs in his first three at-bats. He's only the seventh player in history to have three home runs in a playoff game. But the fourth run, which was actually the first run, came from Ian Kinsler, who also hit a solo shot, but that was leading off the game. That came as the second pitch of the game off rookie Jeremy Hellickson for the Rays. So the Rangers are on. They're in the ALCS. They're awaiting the winner of Yankees-Tigers. Hopefully it's the Tigers. I don't really like the Yankees. Many people outside of New York don't like the Yankees, even though they have a following everywhere. It seems like there's always Yankees fans, but no one ever likes the Yankees. But I'm hoping for Tigers. And I think Tigers-Rangers will be a great matchup. I would look forward to Game 1, Verlander against the Rangers offense. The Rangers were my pick to win the World Series. I was super impressed with them last year. Diehard Giants fan, I picked the Rangers to beat the Giants in the World Series out of respect. Not because I didn't believe in my team, but the Rangers are super talented. And they're equally as talented this year, if not more talented. Everyone has another year of experience. Everyone had their first playoff experience. Everyone has World Series experience. That just makes them that much more dangerous. They lost Cliff Lee, but frankly, in the World Series, the Giants roughed up Cliff Lee anyway, so it doesn't make that big of a deal. Even though getting there is different without Lee. But their offense is amped up. They're healthier than they were last year. They got Napoli. They got Beltre. And Beltre flexed his muscle today and showed why he's an important pickup. So I got the Rangers. I'm hoping the Tigers advance. They're working on it today. They're playing to advance. The Phillies also won today. Phillies looking to advance against the winner of the Brewers-Diamondbacks series. Brewers are up 2-0 and playing tonight in Arizona. We'll get to that a little later. Right now, we're going to take a break. Coming up next, we'll have the Sports Report Top 10, the top 10 stories that the Sports Report found interesting this past week. This is the Sports Report. I'm DJ B here on radio.dominican.edu.
Love.
right, Brian Sanchez back here with you on the Sports Report. We'll get to the Sports Report top 10 in a second. First, I'm going to give a update on the playoff game that's going. The Tigers playing the Yankees, winner. If the Tigers win, they move on. Sorry about that. If the Tigers win, they move on. If the Yankees win, they get to keep playing for their lives. In the bottom of the first, the Tigers had the bases loaded, and the Yankees got out of it. It's currently 0-0 in the top of the third. Jorge Posada just got hit by a pitch. He's on first base with Russell Martin at the plate. Porcello on the mound. He's been struggling this year. Two innings, 1K, not looking so bad. Burnett, A.J. Burnett for the Yankees. Two innings pitched, three walks and a K. So he's being his usual spastic, not worth the money self. And that's the update on the Yankees game. Martin just hit a single to center. So it's first and second now with no outs, as it looks like Porcello is going back to himself, letting people on base. But now we're going to get to the Sports Report top 10. 10 of the most interesting stories that the Sports Report found. And here we go. The Red Sox beer batters. A couple days ago, there's a report out that during games, Red Sox players would go into the clubhouse and drink beer. Might have been one, might have been three. Nobody knows. Nobody's going to name players as an anonymous source that said it. However, it's been out there for a couple days. Everybody in baseball has heard about it, and no one from the Yankees has denied it. Another thing on top of that is Terry Francona got fired for having a lack of control over the team. Perhaps the lack of control would come from players going into the clubhouse and drinking beer during the game. I'm just thinking out loud there, but it kind of, you put two and two together there and it makes sense. And it also shows that's so crazy unprofessional for the Red Sox players to do that. I mean, you got fans putting everything into this team, especially in Boston, hearts and souls, paying hundreds of dollars at games for tickets, parking, food, all to watch you play. And you're going to go into a clubhouse and drop a brewski down in between innings? That's just terrible. And that might have been part of the reason why when they said Francona was out, Francona said, I got to see the true colors of players and he didn't want to be there anymore. And that's just ugly. And then this comes out after they have this humongous September collapse. And this just is a black eye for the Red Sox organization. And the fact that nobody has denied it makes me really believe that it happened. And if I was a Red Sox fan, I'd be pissed. If they came out and said Aubrey Huff was drinking beer in the dugout all season, or the clubhouse all season for the Giants, and that's why his numbers were so awful and why we didn't have an offense, I would be so mad. It would be unbelievable. It'd be bad for my health. I'd probably punch a wall or something. And I'm half as crazy as Boston fans are, so I'd hate to see what they're doing over there. Number two, the Fighting Illini, the Illinois football team. Shocking, everybody. They're up at 5-0. They beat a ranked opponent, number 22, Arizona State, when they were number 22. It still counts as being a ranked opponent. And people are saying they have a chance to make a January 1st bowl. Those are the biggies on January 1st. And this is a total shock. Nobody saw this coming from the Illini. And they're hitting the road for the first time this season. They're 5-0, and all five are at home, which makes it a lot easier, but still doesn't take anything away from the wins. But their first road game is against the Hoosiers of Indiana. And the Hoosiers of Indiana are whipping boys for other teams in college football. They do have a win. They're 1-4. But still, if you're a team that's any good, you should probably put a beating on Indiana. So Illinois taking their act on the road for the first time. Probably going to get a win, so you could book them for 6-0. 6-0 makes them bowl eligible already in the season. It's the first time they've been bowl eligible in at least 8 years this early in a season. And people are looking for big things from them. So we'll keep track on the Fighting Illini, surprising team for the rest of the season, see how they go. And we move on to number three, and we move back to the Red Sox. The Red Sox are narrowing their list of managing options. There was a rumor about a week ago that they were looking into Bruce Bochy. That looks less likely as we move forward, because they usually go with an unknown coach, a la Terry Francona, like he was. But some people thought that the Red Sox would make a run at Bobby Valentine or Joe Torre. Both would have surprised me, because I don't think Bobby Valentine has it anymore. If he had it, teams would have brought him over from Japan 8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1 years ago when he was coaching over there. And he didn't even do that well over there. So I don't think he has it. I would like it because I don't really want to hear him in the booth anymore. He's kind of gimmicky for me. But don't look for him to go to the Red Sox. And another one was Joe Torre. People are saying he might be interested in getting back into the managing game. And what a better way to get back at the Yankees after you don't make the playoffs if you're the Red Sox than bring in Joe Torre, who brought them all their success, and hope he turns it around for them. But they are old, established veteran coaches, and the Red Sox have a track record of going with young unknowns. One of them that they could be going for is Dave Martinez. He's the bench coach for the Rays, who just got knocked out today by the Rangers, as I mentioned earlier. And he is a pretty known commodity. He's one of the bench coaches that a lot of teams think will be a good head coach. So teams will be looking for him to manage them, mostly the White Sox. The White Sox are the main team interested in him. They're expected to make a hard push at him. So the Red Sox may not even go after him. Although the Red Sox have shown in the past, you don't want to get into a bidding war with the Red Sox because they will go above and beyond anything you're willing to go to because they don't care. They just want to make sure they can beat the Yankees at the end of the day. Now, I mentioned today that the Phillies won. And one of the big reasons the Phillies are winning, they're up 2-1 in the series, is Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy Rollins is a free agent at the end of the year. And he's a key cog to the offense. And speaking of offense, Derek Jeter just hit a double for the Yankees, knocking in both runs. It's 2-0 Yankees in the top of the third. But I digress back to Jimmy Rollins. The Phillies don't have a lot of money to spend because they've spent it all. They are currently spending it all. And that means they're not going to be able to afford Rollins. And Rollins came out and said he is not going to accept a hometown discount to stay in Philadelphia. He's been in Philadelphia since 2000 when he made his career debut. His hometown is over here in the Bay Area, Giants fans, hint, hint. But they call it the hometown discount since he's been in Philadelphia so long. He's played for them his whole career. Now, if you think about it, the Phillies are really, really, really close to the luxury cap. They have players that are crazy expensive, like Halliday, the starting pitcher Hamill, starting pitcher Lee, outfielder Pence, second baseman Utley, outfielder Victorino, and first baseman Howard. And those are just their higher paid players. That's a lot of money right there on those few players. But they have contracts coming off the books this year. They're going to have Ibanez leaving, Kyle Kendrick, starting pitcher leaving, Ryan Madsen, the setup man leaving, Brad Lidge, the former closer leaving. Roy Oswalt is probably going to go because he's a lot of money and he's had injuries and his back issues are the main problem. And when you get back issues with the pitcher, that's something you don't want to mess with. So you might look and see all that money coming off the books and say, hey, look, they're going to have money to sign Rollins. But that's not true. All those players I just named, there's six that are leaving the team that played intricate roles during the last 3 years for the Phillies. That means they're going to need to replace the depth chart. They're going to be down on players. They need to spend their money on filling out a roster. You saw what happened with the Miami Heat when you don't worry about filling out a roster. They got the three superstars, and what did they win? Nothing. Why? Because if one of them went down or one of them had a bad game, you're bringing in Mike Bibby or some bum like that who just can't hang with these guys because they didn't have a team. They just had stars, and they didn't have a team. You can get away with that a lot more in basketball than you can in baseball. So it looks like Rollins would be on the way out. However, here's his issue. He wants a 5-year contract. He's 32 years old. That is really long to sign an old veteran shortstop like Jimmy Rollins, who's had injury problems the last couple years, which is why he hasn't been productive up until this year. 5 years is a long time. I don't know many teams that are going to be willing to sign Jimmy Rollins for 5 years. If it's 2 years, I want the Giants to sign Jimmy Rollins. I want him batting leadoff. I want him playing shortstop. It's better than any other option we got. But 5 years, I don't want the Giants to touch that. However, if we're talking Giants, that's an old player right there. There's a shot they'll give him a long-term deal. But the Phillies are going to let him test the free agent market. A lot of people thought they'd try and lock him up during the season. Didn't do that. So it looks like Jimmy Rollins will be hitting the free agent market. And we're back to the Red Sox. The Red Sox like to make a lot of news. They like to be the headline, and if they're out, the only way they can do it is with players in front office and beer drinking, apparently. But the Chicago Cubs are interested in Theo Epstein. Theo Epstein is the GM. He took over the Red Sox when he was 28 years old, which is astonishing. And when he took over, there were two franchises that were famous for not winning World Series. That was the Red Sox and the Cubs. Now there's only one franchise famous for not winning World Series, and that's the Cubs. And that's because Theo Epstein brought the Red Sox World Series. Matter of fact, brought him two. So now they're saying that Theo Epstein may possibly be available for interviews for other teams, especially following this September collapse and Terry Francona being shown the door. Maybe Theo would be on the way out too. I saw a tweet from John Heyman about 20 minutes ago. He said he was 75-25 that Epstein will stay in Boston, which is pretty good. Heyman knows his stuff. He's usually right. He doesn't say stuff unless he knows it. He's not one of those reporters that tweet things and have to send an apology tweet later because he got it wrong. So maybe the Cubs get Theo Epstein. I think it'll help them because he obviously understands direction, and it'll bring them a face to the GM. Maybe he could bring in players. Maybe he could bring in a coach to Chicago finally that can handle all of them. But the big problem in Chicago was Carlos Zambrano, and that brings me to number six on the top 10. The Florida Marlins are talking about trading for Carlos Zambrano, and I just can't understand why anybody would do this. Now, the reason they're considering trading for Carlos Zambrano is because the Marlins' new manager, Ozzie Guillen, is buddy-buddy with Zambrano and thinks he is the key to Zambrano getting back on track. And he's reached out to him a couple times in this offseason already and talked to him about getting under control and playing with emotion but controlling it and using it to pitch. And Ozzie really thinks he can get Zambrano back to form that he was 3-4 years ago. And when Zambrano was right and his head wasn't messed up and he was healthy, he was a dominant force. He struck out everybody and his ERA was in the twos. And Ozzie thinks he can get it back. I think Ozzie's crazy. I think Ozzie doesn't realize how much of a hothead Zambrano is. And I don't think Ozzie realizes how much of a hothead Ozzie is. It would be an absolute circus if Ozzie Guillen and Carlos Zambrano were on the same team. I would love it because it's not my team. It's the Marlins. So I get to see them deteriorate. They already got a young star in Logan Morrison who got sent down to AAA only because he tweeted critical things about a fellow teammate, basically telling him he needs to step his game up and hustle. We're talking about Hanley Ramirez, who dogs it when his team's out of it and he's not feeling well. Morrison called him out. They sent him down to AAA. He's a disgruntled young star. Now you bring in Ozzie Guillen, who the Twitter convos between him and Logan Morrison are just going to be amazing. And you're going to add Carlos Zambrano to that. Carlos Zambrano, the destroyer of water coolers, is going to be what the Marlins need to get right. And Ozzie Guillen, Mr. Cuss out everybody and insult everybody who didn't do good that game, is going to be the guy who's going to fix Carlos Zambrano. That'll be the day. And if that happens, I will apologize on the show to both of them, but I don't think I'm going to have to. Now we get to number seven, which is John Smoltz, who announces for TBS now. He does a pretty good job. He knows his stuff. And apparently he knows pitching so well that he knows pitches and results before they happen. I don't really think this story is as big of a deal as everyone else is making it out to be, but it's pretty funny. I was watching the game when it happened. It was the Tigers game, and the Yankees had Rafael Soriano in the game. Delman Young at the plate, late in the game, obviously, because Soriano's in. And when Young's walking to the plate, Smoltz says, they need to watch out on the first pitch here. And the other announcer goes, oh yeah? And Smoltz doesn't say anything. First pitch comes, Delman Young, home run. Now everybody's calling Smoltz the psychic and stuff like that. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I thought it was a funny story when I read it because everyone loves it when you call your own shots. I mean, you sit around, you're watching your favorite team and the player's up and you say, I think he's going to get it right here. And then boom, home run. You love that because everyone stands up, puts their arms out, beats their chest. I called that, man. I called that. Who called that? And it's kind of funny when an announcer does it, but it would have been better if he could celebrate like we do at home. But he couldn't because that would be unprofessional. He needs to go talk to the Red Sox about unprofessional because they obviously have no idea what that is. Now, I've talked about it every show so far because it's a big deal, and that's the NBA labor talks. And it's going bad now. Today was supposed to be the big day. You know, they had gone close on Friday, and they both went back and worked on proposals that both thought the other one was going to accept. Like, I hadn't heard this before in football, but today was it. They were going to get it today, get a couple weeks of preseason in at the end, and play the November 1st opener. Couldn't have been more wrong. Talks broke down over money and when games would be played, and both sides left saying they were further apart than they were 4 weeks ago. It's bad. It's not happening, folks. These two are so far apart. The NBA should have just not messed around like the NFL Players Association did and deunionized and took it to court, and then it would have started coming out of the owners' pockets, the court cases, and then the owners would have said, forget it, we'll just give in a little bit, we're still going to be billionaires, and we're still going to make billions every season, so it's fine. But the NBA players messed around, took too long. The opener is supposed to be on November 1st, less than a month away. That's not happening. Stern canceled the rest of the preseason today and said that the November 1st opener is in doubt, because I'm sure on October 31st, they're going to agree to something, and on November 1st, they're just going to roll the balls out there and play. No practices, no training camp. I highly doubt it. Season will be missed. If they're willing to play a half season, they may be able to sneak a half season in, which I wouldn't mind because the Warriors always have a good first half and struggle in the second half, but I'll get to the Warriors talk later in the show. But it's not happening, and I don't see it happening. And don't look forward to an NBA season this year. It's going to be unfortunate at Christmas, because I love waking up Christmas morning, doing your thing with your family, and then it's basketball time, and they always put the matchups on Christmas, and I was looking forward to a little Heat Lakers or Lakers Celtics or Mavericks Celtics, Mavericks Heat, something, but they're not going to give it to me, and it's a little frustrating. Now we get to number 9 on the Sports Report Top 10, and that's B-Wee's Brian Wilson. You may have heard of him. If you're around these parts, I'm sure you've heard of him. And now, nationally, you're starting to hear of him. I love Brian Wilson. I want that on record. Brian Wilson, if you ever hear this clip, I love you, man. Never stop doing what you're doing. Comcast Sportsnet asked a question on Twitter. It was on the website, too. Are you sick of Brian Wilson's shtick? And do you want him to focus on baseball? And I sat there and I said, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Brian Wilson has a new commercial promo thing for NBA 2K12, because Brian Wilson is a notorious Celtics fan. And it's a 2-minute commercial about how the 1986 Boston Celtics are the greatest team in history. I've watched it. I found out about it today. I watched the Brian Wilson clip about 74, maybe 75 times since I found it at 2 o'clock. And it's just hilarious. And he's one of the funniest people ever. He talks about if you could put all their great players in a blender of greatness, and mix it, it would be strawberry milkshake because they're that sweet. And this dude just goes off. But writers at Comcast seem to think that it's going to distract him from baseball, and all his little gimmicks are going to take away from his ability to play. And they're doing this over an NBA video game commercial 2-3 weeks after the season is over, when there's nothing to do for Giants baseball, and it's going to take away from his baseball ability. What is he playing on a winter league team that the Giants are heavily invested in winning the championship, and they're afraid he's going to blow a save for them? No, he's not. He's just at home. He's hanging out. This thing's hilarious. He's in little tiny short shorts, like Larry Bird short shorts. He's got the big black beard and a blonde Larry Bird wig on, and the whole thing is hilarious, and they're getting on him thinking that that's why he had more blown saves and more injuries this year, because he did more commercials. And all I have to say about that is, are you kidding me? It's very frustrating. Yeah, I'm biased because I love Brian Wilson, and I don't care, because they're wrong. And if they ever ask that again, I'm going to find them and I'm going to smack them around. Now, before I smack something around in here talking about Brian Wilson, because I get very defensive of my Wheeze. And by the way, if you want to see that clip of his commercial, go to my Facebook page, search the Sports Report on Facebook. Just go ahead, watch the whole thing. I suggest you watch it 7, 8, 9 times in a row minimum. I've watched it 74, and I've decided that I am lowballing it. You will laugh hysterically. This guy's gold. If you want to see more Brian Wilson gold, go to his website, brianwilson38.com. I pretty much live on that thing, but that's enough Brian Wilson. I'm going to get you to number 10, which is a game update. Still 2-0 New York Yankees. Yankees have 2 runs on 2 hits, no errors. Detroit has no runs on, I'm going to say it. Sorry, Yankees fans, I'm saying it. Detroit has no hits. It's 3 innings. Relax, if any of you are listening, on no errors. Miguel Cabrera just made the last out in the bottom of the third, so they're heading to the top of the fourth. Alex Rodriguez leading up. Mark Teixeira following him. Nick Swisher up after that. I'm going to go ahead and get out now. When we get back, I'm going to do the fantasy focus. I'm going to give you a quick little tidbits on your fantasy football team, what you should do, what I've done, what the Yahoo experts think you should do. We're going to discuss those for a bit. That's after the break. I'm Brian Sanchez. This is the Sports Report only on radio.dominican.edu.
Don't turn around, there's only now. Yeah, I know that. When doubt abounds, I make these sounds, so you will know. And you know that the bliss that your fears out of reach, just dream to begin with. Can you hear? Is it clear? Can I sing through my tears? Teach me to reveal this. For you become just words on a page, a voice on the phone. This distance between us is all we have known. Your words on a page, a voice on my phone. This heavenly gesture leads me back home. Explain the one thing I know now. This distance started all of it, but I want you around. You're what I can't explain. The timing was right now, with everything in front of me. I want you around.
Free, for your heart won't last if you don't let.
Brian Sanchez back here with you on the Sports Report, only on radio.dominican.edu. Now it's time for the fantasy focus. I'm going to give you two players to pick up if they're available and two players to avoid at all costs if they're open in your leagues. I know they're open in a lot of them. They're open in mine. First one, if Stephen Ridley is there, pick him up immediately. The Patriots are going to use this guy like they use every other small scat back in their system. Remember Sammy Morris in his prime? That guy was worth 8 to 10 fantasy points a week. Ridley's going to be no different. Rookie out of LSU, incredibly talented, quick, shifty, good hands out of the backfield. That's what I like about him. This week, Yahoo has him projected at 10 points, and that's impressive for a rookie who hasn't even been named the starter yet, but Danny Woodhead has been ineffective. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis has been okay, but the Patriots aren't happy with his play. But I like Ridley. He gets in between the tackles, and he moves around. He's small, but he can run up the middle. He also bounces it to the outside easily, and on screen passes and even passes over the middle, he's money. So I see him being a good PPR guy. That's points per reception. And I see him getting yards and touchdowns. He had a good game against Oakland, which is a good defense, this last Sunday. I would pick him up if he's available. Now, one not to pick up, Brandon Jacobs, New York Giants. His fantasy points are not bad, and he's always projected to do pretty good. This week, he's been projected he's going between 6, 7, and 8 points, which is respectable for a third running back or in a deep 12-team league. He's a decent pickup. On the bench, he's a decent pickup. But he doesn't get many yards. He's been mostly relying on scoring touchdowns. And I never like to play that because what if it's in a game and Tom Coughlin, Giants coach, just doesn't feel comfortable giving it to Jacobs in the red zone? Then he's going to get you 19 yards, no touchdowns. You get 1 point, and that's not going to cut it. So with him, he's not a big play threat. He never has been, even when he was at his heyday and he's a second, third round pick. So I wouldn't bother getting him. But there's a Giant that I would pick up, and that's Victor Cruz. I actually did pick him up today. I think he's big time. He has incredible talent. He got put in last year, never looked back. This year, Giants dealing with some injuries. Steve Smith went to Philadelphia in a shocking move. Victor Cruz has game. Eli Manning knows it. That's why he keeps going to him, and Cruz is a good third receiver if you have that many in your league. If you're a deep 12 team, he's probably needs to be on a team. He probably is already in the smaller league, 8 or 10, he might not be. I would keep him as a third receiver or a bench receiver because he's going to put up points. And the final guy not to pick up, going local, Michael Crabtree. He's available in a good amount of leagues. People were excited about him going for, where is he? Five catches for 68 yards this last Sunday against the Eagles. People got excited about that. Smith showed some promise. People think Crabtree could have a nice little season. I don't. We've seen this before. He has a good game. Then he disappears, whether it's drop passes or Smith not looking to him. I wouldn't bother. 12-team, if you're in a 12-team league, three receivers, and you need a bench one, I guess you can go with Crabtree. Don't expect much, though. That's going to be it for the fantasy focus for this week. I'm going to get out real quick now. We're going to have a short break. And when we get back, we're going to rep the Bay with P-Ab and T-Baby. Coming on at the end of segment like they love to do, we're going to talk Niners. Big game for them this last week, beating the Eagles. And then at the end of last week's rep in the Bay, we started talking about Klay Thompson for the Warriors. We're going to finish that. And that's going to be after the break. I'm Brian Sanchez. This is the Sports Report only on radio.dominican.edu.
Please miss my lips. Kiss again. Kiss again. Place much colder.
take a way of life in a place much colder. Not gonna leave this town. I'm ready to make up, ready to break up, ready to fight over the slightest thing. Your best defenses, the total oppression of your soul. Your best defenses, defective mechanism, and the total oppression of your opposite intent.
Brian Sanchez back here with you on the Sports Report, only on radio.dominican.edu. Folks, it's time to rep the Bay with P-Av and T-Baby. I love this segment. We get these guys in here. They know their stuff. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Doing great. It's good to be here. Thanks for having us again.
Yeah, man, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. Niners, baby, all the way.
Man, you said it right there. Anyone around this town as a Niners fan has to be feeling great right now. It doesn't even matter that it was 2 days ago. They beat the Eagles in a big comeback. I want from both you guys, what were the big things you took away from this game?
Wow. I mean, there's so many to pick from. Biggest thing so far, I mean, it's hard to judge a coach, but Harbaugh, you got to at this point at least say he's a good coach. 3-1 with the Niners. He's got Smith playing well. The biggest things, I think, are Harbaugh and the performance of Smith. Those are my two things. And the defense is so solid, but it's been solid for years. So primary things, Harbaugh and Smith.
Primary thing, dual backs. No one ran a dual back system since Steve Mariucci. Harbaugh comes in, brings in two backs early in the season, and I like it. I like the dual back system. Gore finally got a 40-yard run. Kendall Hunter, 40-yard catch and run. So I love the dual back system.
Yeah, and we had Gore, who you mentioned, 15 rushes for 127 yards and a touchdown. Kendall Hunter, 9 for 28. Nothing special, but making his presence felt. Kendall Hunter, that was a good draft pick. I like him. I'm going to stick with draft picks for a minute and talk about Aldon Smith. He had 1.5 sacks yesterday. He was always in the backfield, had his arms around Vic at least 5 times. Could have had more, but we had some penalties that brought the sack back. We've talked about him before. Do you guys like him any more than you did last week?
I always liked Aldon Smith. He's a better Manny Lawson. This guy could pass rush. He's got the skill set of Manny Lawson and Paris Harrelson. I'll tell you that. People are saying they're comparing him to DeMarcus Ware. It's too early to say that. But Aldon Smith, this guy's a stud, flat-out stud. I'll tell you that. His long arms, he could play basketball, he could leap. He's about 6'4", 294 pounds, and he's fast. So,
yeah, not only does he have the skills of Lawson, he actually puts it on the field. Yep. As a Niner fan, you know, Lawson never really performed for the team. But this guy, yeah, I admit, when he was drafted, I didn't know much about him. I was kind of shaking my head, like, who is this guy? There's about 10 other guys on the board I'd probably take. But after that performance last week, or a couple days ago even, you got to like him at this point in the season.
Yeah, and that's just another thing on Harbaugh now. His draft is shaping up really nicely. We haven't seen anything from Kaepernick, and I don't think we will for a couple years. We shouldn't, because he's going to rush him.
One play.
His debut was coming in, calling a timeout. That was good. Then he had a play. But Hunter has game. Aldon Smith has game. And I didn't know about the Smith pick either when we got him, but I love it now. So Harbaugh's earning respect in the draft. And I want to stick on defense now. Bowman and Patrick Willis both had 6 tackles. So once again, Bowman equals or betters Willis. P-Ab, I know you love him. Talk about him for a second.
Well, right now, if you're going to just go throughout these four games they played, I'm sorry, Bowman looks like a Pro Bowl linebacker.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He looks like a Pro Bowl linebacker. I wouldn't say best in the league. I wouldn't say that. But he's a lot better than what I thought I would get from him. And he's honestly doing a lot better than Takeo's spikes.
Yeah. He looks like a bodybuilder, too.
He
Bowman
does.
His arms are like pipes, like metal pipes. And Willis, I've talked to Pia about Willis before. I think Willis is potentially a top 5 player in the NFL. I think he's incredibly good. So the fact that Bowman is on his level, or even exceeding his level at times this season, bodes very well for the Niners' defense.
Yeah, it seems like Bowman is playing off Willis's talent better than Spikes did.
Right.
That he's utilizing it to his ability.
Yeah, age means a difference. Spikes was going down. He's not even having that good of a season for San Diego.
Yeah, Spikes kind of just, he had the sacks with the cool dances. That's what he did for the Niners. But he wasn't all that productive for him.
So and he was a leader. He was
a
leader.
But it's nice to have Bowman in there to change it up.
Yeah, there was one play that really summed up Bowman for me. Vic swung it out wide to McCoy by the sidelines. And then I saw a huge linebacker with a 5 on his back run over, corral McCoy and just nail him out of bounds. And I was sitting in my apartment in my dorm room, and I just went, "Oh, Willis, you beast!" And then he started walking up, and I was like, "Oh my God, that's Bowman."
Yeah,
yeah.
That play just looked like Willis. He squared him up, brought him down. And another big performance on the defense. We got our first real taste of Deshaun Goldson this weekend. He has been out. He had 10 tackles and recovered a fumble. That's the guy we wanted flying around. And he had a play where he just killed Jason Avant.
Yeah, he had some huge hits. Some huge hits from Bowman.
It's nice to see him back, and I like that Harbaugh's rotating safeties, Goldson, Smith, Williams, Whitner, who we didn't see this weekend with the injury. But the big story for me has got to be Alex Smith going out and winning a game. We've said here on the show that he never wins a game. He just doesn't do anything.
Exactly.
Here's his line. 21 for 33, 291 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no picks. What'd you guys think of him?
This is as good as I've ever seen Smith, honestly. I would have loved to have him break the 300-yard mark, even though he basically did. Might as well count as 300 game. I would have loved to seen that, because I don't know if Smith's ever had a 300-yard game. Has he? I don't even know.
I'm pretty sure he had one. That was last year.
Okay, one.
Spread
but
offense.
Even with that, it was a great performance and definitely the best I've ever seen Smith. And it was against the Eagles, who are supposed to have the best secondary, according to a lot of the analysts. They say the Eagles have the best secondary, and Smith kind of picked him apart.
Biggest play in my mind, touchdowns, big plays, but the biggest play, throwing a deep route to Michael Crabtree over Nnamdi Asamoah. Come on, this guy dominates the right side of the field, and you're throwing it over Nnamdi? That's confidence there, and it shows that Harbaugh has confidence in Alex Smith.
Yeah, and Smith's had the tools. He's always had the tools. It's just a matter of putting the tools together on the field. So maybe Harbaugh's said something or implemented some system that's allowed Smith to perform better on the field.
Yeah, you guys are absolutely right. And what I think his key was, you look at the receivers, Crabtree had 68, Morgan had 65 and a touchdown, Kendall Hunter, the rookie, had 62, and Davis had 45. That's really spread out.
Very.
That's not focusing on one guy. It almost seemed like he was going through progressions for the first time. And back to the defense, we might have won, and the defense might have had some bright spots, but they didn't really do that well. Michael Vick went for his career high 416 yards. He also ran for about 8 rushes for 75 yards. But at the same time, they hold McCoy to 18 yards rushing. He's been dominating the league. And then you turn the page again, and DeSean Jackson goes 6 catches for 171 yards. So what do you take away from the defense as a whole?
Secondary, bottom line, secondary. Defensive line's good.
Yeah.
Not great. They're good. Not great.
Not great.
Linebackers are great.
Yes.
Secondary, bad. They're not even solid. I'm saying bad. But best player on that secondary is Carlos Rogers. And then you have DeSean Goldson, who's okay. Bites on a lot of play action fakes. But, I mean, secondary needs a lot of improvement. Shante Spencer seems like a nickel corner. Mm. They need someone to complement Carlos Rogers.
Yeah, the secondary is looking poor, but we also need to account for DeSean Jackson's ability. He's been tearing up defenses on deep plays for a couple years now. And I'm big DeSean Jackson fan. So if I can see the Niners win and Jackson perform, that's a good day for me. But definitely the secondary needs to tighten it up. But I don't know if they will, because I don't know what other options they have. This might be a season-long kind of thing for them.
Yeah, they got the kid Culliver, who I think is a physical specimen, but I'm not sure he's ready to be on the field all the time. I've seen a couple. He's had some soft coverage. Balls go in front of him. I think we missed Dante Whitner, because I think he's a really good, smart safety. He would have been over the top on DeSean Jackson on a couple of those, because there were some unexplainable DeSean Jackson plays. But it comes down to Carlos Rogers and who, and there's no answer.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys right on the nail there. And now I want to get back to something we were talking about at the end of last week's show. We were talking about trading and keeping Monte Ellis on the Warriors. And we were talking about, if he goes, Klay Thompson stepping in. And I know Jerry West is huge on Klay Thompson. He keyed on Klay Thompson about 2 days after he was hired and said that was his guy. He ended up being there and he took him. I heard Thompson was going to go 20. And then right before the draft, everyone else fell in love with him. He was going to go 7 or 8. What do you guys think of Klay Thompson?
Well, I'll attack that first, you know, my MPM. I'm a big fan of Klay Thompson. I'm a big fan of Cal basketball, so every time Washington State played Cal, I would see Thompson drop between 30 and 40 points, rain in like 8 threes. He has beautiful form. He's just a really smooth player. He's deceptively athletic. He's tall. He's lanky. I really, when they drafted Thompson, I was so happy. I went crazy. He was the guy I wanted. I think a lot of Warrior fans wanted. So I don't know how they're going to utilize him this season, but I am thrilled to have Klay Thompson in a Warrior uniform.
And I'm going to say this. You're talking about Jimmer Fredette. This guy is more of a complete player than Jimmer Fredette. I'll say that. He's bigger, more physical. Jimmer Fredette may have better handles, but Klay Thompson, he's NBA ready. His dad was a former NBA player. This guy's ready for the NBA.
Well, I think that's not even bold, though. I think most people would say Thompson is far better than
Fredette. I know, but people are saying talent-wise, Fredette might be better. I'm saying Klay Thompson.
Yeah, and Klay Thompson, some people want to label him as a shooter, and that would be dead wrong. He's not just a shooter. Yeah. He's a scorer. What I thought was interesting, because I'm with you guys. I love Klay Thompson. I had only seen him a couple times before we drafted him. Then I went back and watched him, and he's very impressive.
Yeah.
He's not a good defender, but he's not going to mess up. He understands lanes. Yeah. He understands assignments. So I like him better than Monte on defense already. I also like the fact that he's 6'7". You can put him between the 2 and the 3. You can switch him with Darrell Wright if you need to.
Right, and he's got the long arms, so he's got some reach on
exactly.
him.
Exactly. He got 5 rebounds a game his last year in college, which I like from a 2 getting 5 rebounds because Warriors need it from everywhere they can get. What I thought was interesting was looking at players that went after Klay Thompson that could have helped the Warriors. I'm going to see what you guys think.
Okay.
Right after the Warriors, Alec Burks went, the shooting guard. P.M., I see you shaking your head.
He's bad. I don't like Alec.
You know him, P.M.?
I know him personally, but I mean,
oh, do you?
Yeah, he's a good guy, but I mean, honestly, I don't think he's a good suit for the Warriors.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to necessarily say he's not a good suit, but Thompson is a better suit. I mean, Thompson for me was the guy. So I think they should have taken him over anybody that was available at that point, unless, of course, the number one pick would have fallen, you know, but Thompson was a good pick at the time.
All right, and the interesting thing about Burks is he would have been another combo guard. He would just be a bigger one than Monte, so maybe it still wouldn't have worked.
Right.
Klay can handle, but he's not going to be the main guy. Number 14, Marcus Morris from Kansas. A little bit in the David Lee mold, but a lot of people like his explosiveness. What do you guys think if he would have been a Warrior?
Yeah, I never really was a big fan of either of the Morris twins in college. They were really good for Kansas, but I'm not going to say they're products of their system, but they had great coaching, great discipline implemented by Bill Self. So I don't really know if either of those guys are NBA-ready players. I think both of them will be like a, like 8-point, like 6-rebound career kind of players. I don't think either of them would have a significant impact for the Warriors, but I think Thompson may have that kind of impact.
And honestly, what surprised me between the Morris twins that Markieff got drafted before Marcus. Marcus is a lot better than Markieff, offensively and defensively, but for a good suit for the Warriors, he could suit them. They need bigs. You can't go wrong with having bigs. But remember, Warriors had a history of drafting bigs, and they didn't turn out well. Like Diogo, you can go on from there.
Patrick O'Brien.
Yeah. The list.
Biedrin's now.
Yeah, the list goes on.
Yeah, it really does. And now I get to a guy at number 15 who I didn't expect to last till 15. I didn't even think he'd be there for the Warriors. I'm talking about Kawhi Leonard, the small forward out of San Diego State. And actually, I was big on Klay Thompson, too. But when I saw him there at the pick, I was conflicted. What about you, T-Baby?
Yeah.
I saw you nodding your head.
Yeah, you know what? I actually have to correct myself. Earlier I mentioned that Thompson was the guy. Like, draft day, he was. But when I originally found out who was entering the draft, for me, Leonard was the guy. Because I saw him at San Diego State, and he's an athletic freak. He gets, like 12 rebounds a game or something. He's, like, 6'7". He has long arms. He has cornrows. He's just a savage player. So I was really impressed with Thompson's game. I mean, not Thompson, with Leonard, Thompson as well, but I was really impressed with Leonard's game. So I was conflicted, as much like you were.
Honestly, I wasn't conflicted. After, if Thompson was off the board, I would have gone Leonard. But the thing is, Leonard is not coming from a bad school.
Really?
San Diego, they're not known.
The 2 seed last year?
Yeah, he was big in the tournament, though.
They were big in the tournament, but their school is not known for being in the tournament. So that's iffy.
Well, I don't know if that really...
You don't know if he could play in big games.
I don't know if that really matters. He played well in the tournament, I believe.
He was good at rebounding.
They lost to UConn, I believe, in the tournament. National champions.
The man cannot shoot that well. Needs to work on his jumper. Needs to work on his jumper. Not as fresh as Klay Thompson.
Now, that's actually the thing I liked about Leonard, that his offense is not good, and he doesn't force it. Because the last thing the Warriors really need is another guy who's going to put up shots all day, but he could defend and rebound, and that's the opposite of Warriors basketball. And I thought he might start to change the culture a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And Leonard is a bit of an enigma kind of player. He's the kind of guy who could put up like 16 rebounds, like 8 turnovers, and like 4 points. He's that kind of player. So you never really know what you're going to get. Thompson probably a safer pick.
And Thompson a better passer, bottom line.
Absolutely. Now I'm going to get to a more refined Kawhi Leonard. And he went number 18 to Washington, Chris Singleton. Okay. He's the definition of defense and rebounding. Everyone called him the best defender in the draft, which is why I thought about him. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think if he would have ended up on the Warriors instead of Thompson?
Yeah, I remember reading a newspaper and in a mock draft that had the Warriors getting Singleton, which I was a little skeptical on, but he definitely is a defensive stopper. You saw right when he returned from his foot injury to Florida State, he made an instant impact. So I think Singleton could have fit well with the Warriors, so I'm not going to hate on that pick at all. That could have worked out.
Yeah, honestly, Chris Singleton, a better fit than Marcus Morris if Morris went to the Warriors, but Klay Thompson's still the guy. I would want Chris Singleton on the Warriors. I'll tell you why. It's because of the history of big men.
True.
All I got to say.
I'll agree with that.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for Reppin' the Bay with P-Ab and T-Baby. T-Baby, why don't you go ahead and tell the people what's on next?
I'm going to tell y'all 1 minute till What Are You Talking About with me and P-Ab. Stay tuned, please.
Thank you for tuning in, folks. This is Brian Sanchez with the Sports Report, only on radio.dominican.edu. I'll see you next week at 6.
If this sounds cliche, I want you back, and I miss you.